This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, catching up with Grant Kirkhope. And oh man, it's so much fun to have a chance to talk with you again.
Oh, thanks for asking me on. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you know, last time we were hanging out at GDC, you mentioned that you were working on a secret thing. And I had no idea that the secret thing would be the Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. So first of all, congratulations. This game has gotten nothing but fabulous reviews. That must feel really good.
No, it's fantastic. You know, you kind of sit on something for 2 years or so, longer for the guys on the team, like more like 3.5 years. And just the fact that to get it out the door and people to like it is just incredible. So, you know, you can never take that for granted. It's such an amazing thing to me. People kind of go, yes, we think it's good and we don't think it's terrible, you know. So, it's been great. It's been a great ride.
Yeah, I bet. I can't even imagine what it must have been like to have to keep this a secret for 2 years. How did you even do that?
Oh, that is so hard. Like, you know, it's funny, like in movies, like the announcer composes straight away, but in games, you've got to keep it quiet. So it's just, you know, it's been such a long time. I mean, the first contact to me in November of 2014. That was when I got the first kind of initial hello, we'd like you to work on a game kind of, you know, contact. So that's quite a long time ago. So it's been it's so hard to keep it quiet. You're just bursting to tell people, you know.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and I obviously legally you can't tell anybody. That's what NDAs are for. But it's got to be tough. But it was totally worth it. Totally worth the surprise. That moment at E3 when Shigeru Miyamoto invited Davide up on stage to be part of the launch, that must have just been so special.
Oh yeah, he was like, you know, in just massive floods of tears. he's a typical emotional Italian, and I think Mr. Miyamoto has been his hero, you know, forever. That's his inspiration to design games, you know. So for Mr. Miyamoto to kind of mention his name, and I was sitting two seats down, I was kind of pushing. I said, get up, stand up for God's sake, you know, don't just sit there. And so, but he didn't want to stand up because he was crying. So when he stood up, he kind of did a quick bow and sat down again because he was in tears, you know. So it was a lovely moment. I think that nobody, you know, I think it was such a massive outpouring of emotions when that game was announced, because even though I knew Mr. Miyamoto was going to be there, I still jumped out of my skin when he actually turned off on stage, you know. And for it to be such a colourful launch for the UB press conference, it was just it couldn't have gone better. I made a few leaks, you know, prior to the E3, which people were like, oh, Rabbids and Mario, I don't think it's going to work. And so it's quite disheartening, really.
Yeah.
And so I think to get to the point where people went, oh, actually, it's a really good idea. Like, we were trying to think to ourselves, it doesn't sound like a great idea, but until you actually play it, and it's such a really good idea. It's such a perfect, you know, sort of smashing together of the two things that, you know, you just burst to kind of tell people. But I think that the E3 was such a moment of just absolute explosion of like, it's gone great, people like it, you know, we could kind of just be on cloud nine for a few days, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you scooped up a bunch of awards there too, which is fantastic. The way that you were brought into the game, I mean, it's kind of funny now. It's funny for me to hear about it, but the fact that you didn't know at first that you were working on a Mario game must have been just such an amazing surprise for you. And I, if you don't mind, I'd love for you to tell that story, because I think it's really great.
Well, my heart nearly stopped. You know, so that was a slight... I mean, when they contacted me in November, they just said, we've got a game we think you'd be a good fit for. And then went through a bit of kind of a contracty thing. It took a little bit of time. They wanted to meet me in Paris. So half of it sort of, well, you know, they came from Milan and I came from America to meet them in Paris at the Paris studio. And I thought, oh, great. You know, so it got to about April, I think, when I flew across. And they kind of all met me in the lobby of the studio. It was all very formal. I was like, oh, this is a bit strange. You know, like, oh, they all stood there. Hello, Mr. Kirkhope, you know, like this. So they took me through the back of the studio through lots of these kind of big security doors, all with like these kind of keys that you just touch that make the door open, you know. And I was thinking, this is a bit weird, because normally Rabbids is a well-known IP, like, you know, it's not like it's going to be super secret or like that for the rest of the studio, you know. So when I got in there, they took me to another side room and I met with Davide Soliani and Romain Brio and Isabel Ballet, who are the two sound guys, and Davide's a creative director. And Davide said, hello, you know, we all got a cup of coffee or what have you, and sat down. He said, well, I'll show you the game, shall I? I said, yeah, you know, it'd be nice to know it. Because I just thought it was called Rabbids Kingdom Battle. That's what they told me when it was on the contract. That just said RKB, so I knew that what that was. And so when they turned the TV on, like Mario's have stood there, I was thinking, oh, maybe they've been playing Mario, you know, before I got here. And he picked up the controller and started to move Mario around. And I was like, so what's that? He said, it's a Mario game, right? Someone told you? I was like, no. No one told me that. I was like, I mean, he said, I sat there for an hour with a really pale face, and they thought that I didn't like the game. Because I was such in shock. Because I just thought, you know, how am I going to write music for Mario after Koji Kondo, who's written music for Mario since like 1985 and is completely brilliant? Like, how am I going to do it without everybody in the world completely hating me and all the team hating me at the same time? Like, I just thought, I'm just not good enough to do this, you know? So it was a massive, and even on the plane on the way home, I was thinking, you know, I almost dare write a note because whatever I write is just going to be wrong, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, that was super scary. Like it was equal parts scary, equal parts exciting, you know, that thing.
Yeah. Well, so how did you even get started then with having that, you know, the reverence for Koji Kondo's music and your love of Mario? What was it that kind of got you going and starting and getting the ideas flowing?
Like any project that I tackle, I think just take the first step, because it's scary until you take the first step, even though it's still scary after that. But, you know, the first tune I wrote was the Ancient Garden melody, that one. So that was the first piece that I wrote. And I kind of had that idea on the way home because I knew that was the first level and they wanted something for that straight away. So I kind of thought, I kind of hummed it into my phone on the way home. And I don't normally do that. I normally have to sit down and do something, but I kind of got that in my head for even kind of, you know, on the plane. So, and that was the first thing that I sent, and they liked that. So I kind of felt I was off to a good start, you know. So except that seemed to go all right. I didn't have an idea of the scale of it. Like, you know, I knew they wanted about 2.5 hours of music. But, you know, it's like, it's that thing in games that a lot of time in movies, you tend to write, you know, a number of themes which you reuse a lot of times throughout the movie. So you've got something to fall back on. Where in games, lots of times, they want new stuff for every level, you know.
Yeah.
So it gets to be, we have to write an enormous amount of tunes. So it was, you know, I really did write something every day for that game for at least 2 years. I mean, without exaggeration, I don't think I missed a day. I worked 7 days a week for at least a year and a half, you know, doing that game, plus the other ones that I was doing at the time last year. And I talked to Davide and Romain every day without exception. So it's been a real, you know, I mean, we're best friends now because we talk to each other all the time, you know. So it's been a great thing to do.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and then you developed what I think is a really cool, like really efficient way of getting the cues approved, which was to send them like a 30-second sample, kind of like, you know, a vertical slice of the game. And is that how you normally work?
I like to do that. Sometimes people don't like it, but if they do like it, it's great. So you get to write, you know, 16 bars, 32 bars, whatever, 30 seconds, whatever, of the kind of what's in your head. And then they say, yeah, it's great, you know, carry on with it. Or they say, no, do it again, it's terrible. You know, you know, so yeah, no, it's a great way to work that, isn't it? And they like that a lot. So I just think it stops you writing a whole 5-minute piece of music and they go, I like it, do it again. You know, you get to at least, you know, get steered in the right direction. But I've got to say that, you know, Davide and Romain were great, the great audio, you know, direction for the game musically. They really had a good idea of what they wanted, which is always great for a composer. When people got real solid ideas, you're not left scratching your head thinking, well, what do they want, you know? I guess the worst kind of thing is when someone says to you, I don't know what I want to hear, but I know it when I hear it. And you could, I've had that a couple of times, and you could literally be there till next Christmas writing the music, you know, and not be any closer. So I think that they were great at that. They provided me with little clips of like YouTube stuff or just pieces that they liked in general that they thought would fit the level to get me in the right direction. So, you know, they were great at that. So, yeah, I like working like that. It's cool to do that.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, Davide said that you are one of his heroes because of your music for Banjo-Kazooie and all those other games. And so he was a little intimidated at first giving you direction, but it sounds like he got over that pretty quickly. I mean, do you remember the moment where he finally like said to you, okay, here's what we're doing, or gave you direction like a normal developer would do?
I don't remember him ever being like that. He's just making that up. Like he says it, you know. He's always been able to tell me, well, I thought so. I didn't detect anything. He was kind of scared to talk to me. Like, you know, he's a right Italian. He's just, you know, hey, Granta, your music is terrible. You must write it again. You know. And he keeps saying, "What? I don't talk like that." So we've had great fun with it. I mean, you know, I think that I think we really got on the same level quick, right? So I think like the same sort of train of thought quickly between all of us. So that there wasn't ever a real time when it was just like, "Oh, this is just terrible. We can't get it right." The only level that I think I had a little bit of to do a couple of times was the Sherbet Desert one, because they had that thing where it was, you know, equally hot and equally cold and in between. So I'd get like a hot version of the tune, a hot, cold version, a cold version, a cold, hot. And, I had to do several different versions that would kind of combine. It would be completely kind of hot, deserty sounding, or completely cold, or somewhere in between. And it kind of crossfades in the game to match up where you walk on the level. So that was, and like getting a tune that could be like sound suitably sand dancey, you know, kind of that doo dicky doo dit doo, you know, that kind of classic old sand dance thing. Or equally, maybe like a snowy level too, was took a little bit of time to get that right. But I'd say that was probably the only one that I feel like I might have done more than a couple of versions of. That was a bit tricky, that one, but I think it worked out great in the end.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it did. And what was cool about it, the thing that struck me about it, and you'd mentioned that, you know, not only were you working with, you know, the legacy of the themes from Mario and then Rabbids and then your own stuff. And the thing that really struck me about that melody, especially in Hot Start, Cold Finish, it reminded me of the music from Lawrence of Arabia. It had that kind of epic and jaunty at the same time kind of quality. I don't know. Was that something you were thinking about at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think I always say any composer worth the salt, you know, has pretty much a good idea of, like, instruments in the head before they even start a piece, once they get the direction. Like, you know, in the desert, you are going to think about Lawrence of Arabia, you know, or even like The Mummy or one of those things, you know, like the early scores, you know, that sound very much like that. You know, they've got that kind of Middle Eastern quality. Yeah, so I think, you know, it was... And I've done a bit of that in the past. Like I've done a few deserty things over the, you know, with DK and banjo as well. And I guess even a little bit in Civilization, I guess the first one, Beyond Earth, that had the desert planet in that game. So, you know, but I think, you know, I've done a lot of humorous stuff in the past, so it's kind of mixing together. That was the whole point, to try to get that kind of wacky Rabbids, but also equally making it, you know, slightly epic if possible, you know, because Davide is always like, he's a very big Lord of the Rings fan. So I think throughout the whole game, I kept thinking, this is going to be a nice little Jolly Mario game, you know, and the first Ancient Garden tune's quite a nice Nintendo-esque sort of tune. But as it went along, it kept going, yeah, bigger, darker, you know, like that. And I was like, I kept thinking, are you sure? Like, towards the end, it gets pretty dark, you know, some of the music.
Yeah.
And I think, if anything, I think he thinks it's not dark enough. You know, it's not, the big boss battles aren't big enough. You know, I was like, are you sure this is like, this is the same game as it started out as, you know? So it was great to do it, because so much, a lot of variety in it. It does gradually get kind of a bit like Harry Potter. It gets darker as it goes along, you know? So yeah, I think all that stuff had to kind of roll it together.
Yeah, and it's neat because, you mentioned the darkness of it, because that's always been a thing with the Mario games. They start out all happy and sunny and primary colors and lots of, you know, jolly little flowers all around. And then all of a sudden you've got this stroll through the graveyard.
Yeah, yeah.
They really do take a dark turn. So, yeah, it must have been like working on a couple of different games simultaneously almost.
Yeah, like Davide's a big fan of the Spooky Oven. He's like, Granta, you are known for your spooky music. It will be great. We have to do the spooky, like he's like that. He thinks I'm a bit of a Danny Elfman, thing, in the spooky stuff. So he was super keen to do a spooky level. So he was dying for me to do it. I cannot wait to hear it. So it put a lot of pressure. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to make a mess of this. Because like he wants to hear it so much. I'm bound to make a terrible version. But it worked out all right. It definitely gets darker as it goes along.
And then you had a chance to unleash your inner Rossini with the Phantom of the Opera cue. How did that all come about? It's really brilliant.
I think Davide's like, he was a big fan of the Conker game years ago, and that's got the Great Mighty Pooh in it, So he kind of waited 20 years to get his chance to do it. So the minute he got his chance, he was like, definitely doing an opera thing. Definitely, definitely, definitely. And I was like, all right, that'd be cool. So but he originally wanted to have, there's three acts. But in the game, I think only two made it because one just couldn't get it done in time. So on the CD, there is like three actual opera songs, but in the game, there's only two. So you don't hear the other one in the game. But he wanted to do an opera song and then followed by a metal version and followed by a rap version. And I was like, oh my God, me doing rap again. I keep having to do rap. And I'm the worst at rap in the world, bar none. I just haven't got a clue. I was like, oh God, I've got to do it again. I did the first opera version, and I did the metal version because I played in metal bands, so I did that myself and guitar and sang on it. And then it got to the rap version. And one of the writers had written like a rap lyric, and I was like, oh, this is going to be dreadful. So I kind of did that, hoping that, they would have got someone to do it properly, but I was like, oh, I've got to write it, But in the end, they decided this didn't fit. So luckily, it went to three opera songs, which I think I can do all right. He's got I had to do all the demo versions of me singing it right, so he's got all those hidden away for blackmail material for later. I have to be good, or he's just going to whip them out and, get them on Twitter, listen to Grant singing terribly. But they got like, I keep forgetting the name of the guy that sang the opera part. He's a French guy, and they recorded him there in France. I never met him, but he did a great job. And I think, I think that's a great little fun part of the game, and it makes it special to get the big boss character singing away. I think and I had to do the little kind of, and so in between I did like the orchestral kind of battle part of it, and they were quite big pieces. So I think it's a nice little section that it works well together.
Who do you think you are? You should kneel on the star. You are nothing but a parody. I find your good role in a tragedy. It's a me, let's go, the only word you know. My art will touch your princess's heart, and you will be pulled apart. You think you win this tournament? I send you to retirement. You saw not worth the hustle. Your princess is in another castle. Mushrooms won't end the pain. Time for the Phantom to start his reign.
Yeah, it's like this whole complete little suite, and it kind of like ramps up, and I love how in the lyrics, or I guess technically the libretto, since it's opera, he's kind of like trying to mess with Mario and telling him that your princess is in another castle and I'll throw you into a tragedy. And the lyrics are really brilliant too. Who came up with those?
That was Christina Nava in the Milan studio. So she's been a TV and movie writer prior to being a games writer. But she did that bit and the thing. So I thought she did a great job on that. And like also, I think, I think we're a little bit frightened that Nintendo might not like the fact that we're kind of making fun of Mario a little bit, because like that isn't traditionally done. But they thought it was fine. They loved it. So, I think that one of the things they did say was like, we don't mind if you break Mario a little bit. Like, we can't do that, but you can.
Oh.
So, it's like, I think they wanted Davide to do something different. And Davide has that kind of sense of humor. So I think there was a couple of other versions of lyrics that were, I guess, slightly more irreverent than the ones that turn up in the game. There's one bit, I think it was something like, you're going to run in fear. No, what was it? It's something to do with diarrhea.
Forget the lyric now.
But he took that one out at the end. Yeah, I can't remember. What was it? Mario or something? Mario, Mario. I can't forget it now. It had definitely a diarrhea in there because I remember singing it. So we're quite surprised that they went for it, but they loved it. So it was cool to do it.
Well, it must have been a great feeling all along knowing that Miyamoto was like totally on board with this. And so that must have given you guys a lot of confidence to, yeah, to take some chances. And, you know, it's because it's not a museum piece and it's kind of fan, you know, like a fan game, but with, you know, really a legit pedigree, too. So it must have been just nice knowing all along that Miyamoto was like on your side rooting for you guys.
Oh, definitely. I think Davide found that hugely, you know, fantastic, and he couldn't believe that, you know, the amount of times he met Miyamoto over the course of those 3.5 years was a lot of times, you know. So for him to just be in the same room as him was just an amazing honor for him, you know, and for Miyamoto to like the game and to encourage him, he just couldn't believe it. Or, you know, it was great for him. Like, I remember he specifically asked me to have a go at the pipe sound effect. Said, you know, could you rabidize the pipe sound effect? It's that kind of dugget, dugget, dugget noise when you go through the pipes. So I did a little kind of, I think it's a clarinet-y thing. I think I did a few different versions of that. I think it ended up being in the game. So that was, you know, when Mr. Miyamoto asked you to do something, you know, you just do it, you know, because you can't believe he's asked you, you know what I mean? So that was a special little bit.
Yeah, I bet. And then Koji Kondo also kind of was keeping an eye on your music too, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that at the start, right? But Davide didn't tell me that. So he said, oh yeah, by the way, you know the sound team over there are vetting everything you do. I was like, why didn't you tell me that, like, you know, 6 months ago? You know, so, you know, especially doing the DK thing, wanted to keep an eye on that. When I did the Mario's, the Super Mario Castle theme, they wanted to keep an eye on that. And I kind of figured that in the Peach's Castle, I wanted to make sure that I could kind of blend my music in with his music. So because it's all live orchestra, I thought, you know, there's a good chance it's going to blend, but I cut it into bits. So a bit of him, bit of me, bit of him, bit of me, and kind of stuck it all together and hoped it became some kind of solid thing that sounded all right, and I think it worked out well. And then they were happy with it. And they sometimes had some pushback about if I'd missed some of Mario's emotions and some of the cinematics. They might have said, "Oh, we think you missed that little thing there, so I might have to change." But I didn't change hardly anything. The one thing I did was we tried to do some of the little stings, the famous Nintendo stings and orchestrate them. So that a game over one that goes da 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 da, that little thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, so I had to kind of orchestrate that. So I did that, but I got one of the parts wrong. It wasn't harmonically wrong; just the movement was wrong. It was going up instead of going down, or something like that. So I got a little bit of a email from them, just saying, you know, very polite because the Japanese are so polite, you know, just saying, yes, we like it, Mr. Kirkup, but it's that. Can you just change the clarinet part, whatever it was, and they sent me a little bit of sheet music. And I, you know, that for me that was a really special moment, just to get a bit of sheet music from them. You know, actually notated the actual Mario little sting ditty thing. I thought that was just like one of those special little moments you're never going to forget, you know. That was great.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I mean, people would kill for that, to be able to get actual music from Koji Kondo. So,
oh, yeah, it was awesome.
That's so cool. Well, you've touched on the orchestration a little bit and some of the instruments that you used, and I love your orchestration. It's just so creative, and you've got some really wonderful, distinctive-sounding instruments, too. There's a bass clarinet and a bassoon, and so as you were working out the music for it, I mean, what kind of decisions did you make? I mean, how did you decide that was the orchestration that would suit the game best?
I just always like to go for it, right, when it comes to orchestra. I think you just should use everything that's there. If it's there, you should just be using it. That's the way I feel about it. So it's great to use contrabassoon, and, you know, for that really, it's a low sentiment in the orchestra, right? So it's got such a fantastic range right down the bottom. So it's great using all that stuff. So, and also a bit of brass player, I tried to use brass a lot because I think sometimes people underuse the brass. And I like to give them plenty to do, you know. So, especially in the big boss pieces, I'm always like trying to think of an excuse to, you know, to get the
brass in there.
And I add a couple of tuba solos and things like that. You know, I think it's good to use that stuff. You know, I love using the orchestra. You know, I like it a lot. You know, being classically trained and sitting in orchestras as a kid, you know, it's a great medium. And I guess it's probably my favourite thing to use, really. And it's great being able to use, you know, the live players. So I guess we had like 45 minutes of live orchestra and the rest is my MIDI stuff. And it's always, I always worry that my MIDI stuff's not good enough and it sounds awful and it's not going to blend. But I think it's all right this time round. So, you know, it's if we could have used live orchestra for the entire game, we would have done, but the budget just wouldn't stretch that far this time round. Maybe if there's a sequel, who knows? It might be that we get to do all with orchestra next time. I don't know. Just fingers crossed, you know. But if it's there, you should be using it. That's what I think. As much as you can, get the percussion guys running around trying to do different instruments all the time. That's what I like to do.
Well, I'm so curious because this music is really, really fun to listen to, and the recording sessions must have been just crazy with, like you say, the percussion guys running around and everybody having something to do.
It was crazy busy. We only had one day to do it, right? So it's super quick. So the poor old brass players were absolutely about to die by the end of the session. I think we did like two sessions, one morning, one afternoon. It was like 40 minutes of music, which is quite a lot. So I guess they were getting a bit tired, you know, by the end of it all. So I think they were cursing me a little bit under the breath, you know. But because I knew that we were going to plan to do that a couple of days originally, but they cut the budget back right at the end. So we had to just squeeze it into one day. And I kind of thought, this is going to be difficult. Because I said to David, I said, you know, choose the pieces you want to record. And of course, he chose all the big ones because, like, the big ones are the ones that are, you know, most impressive, I guess, you know. And I thought, yeah, 2 days would be okay. When it's one day, it was like, they're not going to like that. So the poor people were like a little bit, you know. But I thought they did a great job, and it sounds great. They turned out in the end, I think it all sounds well together.
It does.
There's nothing more exciting than being in that room, you know, when they're playing it. It's, you know, people playing your music. It's just, there's nothing better than that. And Davide spent quite a lot of time in the actual room when they were playing it in tears, like, you know, like, well, I listened to it all. And I was in the control room most of all the time. And quite a few guys from Ubisoft came over. So it was a great day, you know. And, you know, James Fitzpatrick's a contractor, and Nick Rayner I've used tons of times before, like for Amalur and Viva Pinata and, you know, kind of things. So I know them well. So, yeah, I kind of feel that we're all good friends there now. So it's great fun, and it's a good day, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, who was the orchestra, and where did you record it?
So we do it in Prague with the City of Prague Philharmonic. So as I say, I've used them for the Pinata games and Amalur and the Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. And we used them for the King's Daughter movie last year as well. So I know those guys really well, and I know the players. So I almost write for the players sometimes, you know, because I know which players we're going to get and stuff. So yeah, it's good to do it.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and they've got a reputation now too, of they're building a catalog of game scores too. Besides yours, they're really busy recording games scores for other games too, which is really cool because things aren't just centered in LA. So
no, yeah, they do it day in and day out. So like it's the site reading is getting, it's fantastic, you know. And I always try to write, you know, in the bigger pieces, I'm trying to write complicated parts some of the time. I always think, oh, maybe I shouldn't do it. But I think, well, you know, I think they're going to manage it. You know, so there's quite a lot of fast string runs and stuff like that, and string parts. And a lot of the, and I've got that. I can't stop doing the John Williams, you know, woodwind, you know, like, I just can't stop writing it. Because Mr. Williams is such a hero of mine, you know. So I'm just a copycat, you know. So I just, they're everywhere now. So I can see when they see me coming, they're like, oh, God, we're going to be playing scales all day long. they're a great bunch of players. They're really good.
Yeah. Well, so what was involved with getting the soundtrack released? Because it's like, you know, corralling the 2.5 hours of music down to a CD or whatever, a typical length soundtrack. What kind of choices did you make, and how did you decide which cues would be a good fit for the soundtrack?
Well, I let them do all that. I said, look, because I think as a composer, you know, you like things that you think are probably really technical that nobody else gets except you. You know, and it's that thing where you want the listener to have the best experience. So a lot of times when people aren't musically trained, it's their best to choose it, because they like, they just pick things that are a good tune, or, you know, a jolly or whatever. And I think that's far more important than me picking some kind of technical exercise that no one gets except me, you know. So I think I let them do all of that. So I did do quite a few of the titles, because they were like, because I guess the language barrier a little bit, some of the titles were just like, you know, Boss One, Boss Two, or whatever, you know. So I kind of came up with a lot of the names, which I don't do normally. There's a digital version which I guess is longer than the CD version. You get with the collector's thing, that's like a straight, I guess, 60-minute, 70-minute CD. And then the digital version, I think, is longer than that, I think, probably, because obviously there's no CD to worry about. And so I'm hoping, you know, perhaps in the future there might be something else release-wise coming out. Who knows? You never know, Kate. You never know, you know.
That's right. You never know.
I'm winking as I say that to you. So you just can't see. So, you know, you have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, of all of the cues that you've written for the soundtrack, is there one in particular that, like, really stands out for you that you're, like, especially proud of?
Oh, God, that's hard.
Okay, well, if it's too hard to
Well, you know, I like the Bowser ones at the end, because they were like, I was trying to kind of knock it out of the park with those. I was just trying to get big as I could at the time, you know. So I think there's that, for me, they're quite spectacular. Like, there's lots of stuff going on in them. Like, you know, it's very brassy and hopefully exciting. But also doing things like Peach's Castle was really special to get to do that, to use the Mario 64 castle tune. Because, like, you know, I played that game a million times, right? And it was, you know, to get to do that, I was in tears writing it, you know. My son would walk past and hear the headphones and go, you know, Dad, can you believe you're actually writing that piece of music, you know, and using it? It's just, it's incredible. You know, I never got over that. I think you pinch yourself every day thinking, I really am writing for Mario, like, you know, probably the most well-known video games character in the world. And I keep thinking I might even be the first Western composer to even write for Mario. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, that started to make it even worse. I was going, oh, my God, not only am I doing his stuff, but I think I might be the first Western guy ever to do it. If I make a mess of this, they're going to absolutely crucify me, you know. you know, so it's just got, you know, and then, you know, I'd be, you know, doing some cinematics, and I'd be watching Mario on the screen going, it's really him, you know, stood there. You know, it was just like, oh, those moments where I've been, you never get, that never wears thin. You never get used to that, I don't think. You know, you see that on the screen and go, oh my God, you know, it never gets tiresome. It's amazing.
Yeah, I bet. It must be just an incredible experience to see him just running around to music that you wrote. I mean,
I'll never get over that, I don't think.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, Grant, it's been so much fun to catch up and really dig in and talk about this, and I really appreciate your time.
No, I'm glad you wanted to talk about it, Kate. It's very kind.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a chance to chat again, but yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, great. Thank you.